Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/watsonassistant.
Good Friday, everybody. Hope you are getting ready. Key, I'm not going to lie. I'm excited for your upcoming Chef Boyardee, which is coming up a little bit later on today. In the midst of you being a dad for all over again, I'm curious what the menu is going to look like coming up for Chef Boyardee later on today.
Man, I've been cooking the last couple. Grilled up. I did some stuff for them and me, and then I had to clean. And I'm like, man, it's here. This is a lot of work. I had to set the table clean. I'm like, man, jeez.
Better get you a Florence.
Then she'd sit around reading the paper and drinking coffee.
All right, Travis, you. It's the wrong time.
No, I strongly disagree. I'm sticking with my Florence was not good at her job. She was always drinking coffee and reading the paper and sassing George.
Speaking of drinking coffee, I'm sitting here trying to order some breakfast on Postmates, and I can't find out on this app if the bag of coffee I'm trying to buy is ground already or not. There's no feature for it. And I'm sitting here, Travis, I'm like going, do I take a chance? Because I don't have a coffee grinder. So I'm like, why don't you have this detail done, Postmates? I don't understand.
Well, you can just grind them with like a hammer or something, whatever you get. Whack it away on your kitchen table, making them into some sort of paste.
I'm sitting here. I'm like, damn, this show's 2 more hours. I need coffee at the house. Let me order some Postmates, get some coffee up here. And I was like, what? Is it ground or not? Damn it. I don't care if it's French vanilla. Can I put it in my coffee maker?
That's what I need to do. So we were talking about this earlier. We were talking about what we're going to do this weekend. We're talking about whether or not you'd go to a movie, whether you go back into the gym, or whether you go to a bar. And what we're always talking about with this stuff is social distancing. Are you comfortable being in groups with people? And this is what all these leagues are trying to figure out. Ravens head coach John Harbaugh said that what the NFL is asking his team and the other 31 teams in the league to do is just not possible. Quote, I've seen all the memos on that. And to be quite honest with you, it's impossible what they're asking us to do. Humanly impossible. So we're going to do everything we can. We're going to space. We're going to have masks. But, you know, it's a communication sport. We have to be able to communicate with each other in person. We have to practice. I'm pretty sure the huddle's not going to be 6 feet space. Our guy's going to shower one at a time all day. Our guy's going to lift weights one at a time all day. He brings up some really good points. That Key, could you come up with a plan, a formula, a format, a spatial relations chart to put together the 60-some-odd guys that you're going to have on an NFL team where everybody's got to be away from it? I just don't know how that happens.
Yeah, it's going to be – it's difficult. It's going to take, you know, precise people. That's one of the reasons the league mandated each team to have a task force charged with coming up with the ideas that will make everybody safe or as safe as possible. He is right, though. It is a communicated sport. But at the same time, not for one minute do I think those masks are going to stay on and not come off in the locker room. Like, seriously, not for one minute. Or a coach is going to stay walking around with their mask on the second floor. I mean, let's be real here. I mean, you know, you see people now, just in the protesting alone, people was out there without a mask. You know, I found myself outside without a mask on. Even though self-conscious in my mind, I'm like, damn, I'm supposed to have my mask on. Oh, well, too late now. So you're going to have a lot of that happening in interactions. The coaches have got to teach. Players are going to have to be in a huddle. They're not going to be 6 feet apart. But I don't think that anyone is expecting you to be 6 feet apart in a huddle. I don't think that they
is
they
it just window dressing? Is it, it's
exactly.
Just
yeah,
there you
it's
go. I have to tell you,
you
to
have
stay
to
6 feet
do.
Apart.
Yeah. Come on, man. Stop.
I mean, it's football. We're tackling each other. We're blocking each other.
Yeah, exactly. So you tackle somebody, you ain't see you inches apart.
You guys are absolutely right. the question is, and this is where I get nervous when it comes to the NFL, because they're very poor at being reactive and they're horrible at being proactive. Do you have the things that are in place to deal with an outbreak? I mean, that's the question. Do to prevent, because to your point, Key and Travis, the fact is that it's a contact sport. It's a collision sport. Everything is about physicality and touching and being intimate in terms of space and stuff like that. So it's going to, if someone has it, it's going to spread. Let's stop pretending. The question is, are you prepared on the front end to deal with it? What are the procedures? What are the protocols? Is there just that one team that gets isolated? Are you going to shut down the league the way that Adam Silver did? Do you have quarantining for just the one person? Do you have enough tests available for the entire team? What about the coaching staff? What about the physical trainers? Does the NFL have a plan in place to handle what's going to be inevitable? Or will it do what is done with a lot of topics of this, which is be blindsided publicly, fumble about publicly, and then come up with something on the back end?
That's what they do. I mean, they try to figure it out as it's happening. And to your point, I mean, Keith, I want to go back to what you're talking about a second ago, that I have a feeling, look, I won't speak for you guys, I'll speak for myself. The social distancing guidelines that are in place are there for a good reason, and you try very hard to follow them as best as you can. But then once you take that first step, once you go in to that restaurant the first time, once you go play that first round of golf, once you take that first ride in somebody else's car, all of a sudden it's like, well, I did it already. I might as well just keep going. And I have a feeling that the football is going to be the same thing, that, okay, everybody wear your mask in this first team meeting, and then somebody's going to take it off and nobody's going to say anything. And the next thing you know, an hour later, we're back to normal. The meeting room is exactly the same. The practices are exactly the same. That on a piece of paper, there's all these protocols, but in practice, it's going to be business as usual.
Man, like, think about it as a sport, and this Raj will chime in here, I'm sure. Dude's going to train and work out, and going to wind up in the same sort of shower atmosphere, right? Or they going to walk into
the hot tub,
mask on?
The hot tub.
Yeah, like, are they going to walk in the showers with mask on? I mean, like.
Of course not.
Of course not.
No, yeah. I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like, we already know. You're going to have people who are going to test positive. That's a given. And it's likely going to be a lot of people. That's just a given, the nature of the sport. The question is, are you prepared? Are you prepared for that? What's the plan? How many teams need to have people infected before you're forced to suspend the season? Do you have any of that worked out yet? You're the one sport, unlike baseball, unlike basketball, unlike hockey, unlike Major League Soccer, you're the one sport that gets a heads up on all of this because your league hasn't even started yet. So you get to sit back, look at all the questions, and then figure out the answers before you're confronted with the actual problem. The question is whether or not they're going to do something they've never done before, which is be proactive.
It's so many people dealing with football teams that you wouldn't even imagine. Like, yeah, you just think of the 53-man roster, right, or the 60-man roster, the players. There's so many administrators. There's so many training staff people, equipment staff. I mean, it's just so many people that if one or two all of a sudden contracts the virus, how fast will it spread throughout a single building?
We've talked a lot about baseball.
Because so many of NFL owners run their entire businesses out of the same corporation office space. Like the Cowboys, for instance, all of Jerry's businesses are all in that one giant complex of his. Like different floors, different wings, but they all interact with the Cowboys. But it's, you know, some run the stadium concessions, some run the merchandising, some run the real estate, some do this, some do that, but they all are crossing paths throughout the day.
Well, think about it. We spend a lot of time talking about this with baseball with a shortened season, right? That if baseball plays 50 games, then, that's a goofy season, a goofy MVP, a goofy champion, the whole thing. And you're right. It would just be odd to have that. But what about the goofiness? And that's probably the wrong word because it trivializes it a little bit. But what if you have an NFL season? Because like you said, LZ, people are going to get sick, and this virus is highly contagious, and it's going to get passed around a lot. And if you have a season where, and just we'll just stay local, where half of the Rams team ends up needing to be quarantined because they get infected, and then half of the teams in the league have half of their teams needing to be quarantined because there's an infection. And now what are we talking about? We're talking about a goofy season. I mean, can you have a season that is considered legitimate if Patrick Mahomes has to spend a month in quarantine, if Lamar Jackson has to spend a month in quarantine, if Russell Wilson doesn't get to play in a bunch of games because a couple of his teammates came down positive with the virus and he was with him and we don't know if he's symptomatic or infected and all of these different things. You talk about just the variables in this. You could have a season that could make no sense at all because people are just not available to play.
Especially if the league and teams are looking as if they're playing catch up in real time. Like I'm perfectly fine and forgiving for a business or a league to have a plan and then life happens and now you're scrambling. But do they have a plan or are they going on hope? Like we hope people don't get infected. We hope, you know, our staff won't get impacted by this. You know, it's like, and I want to believe that an organization comprised of very, very successful men and women will have a plan in place. But then you're reminded that they saw the Ray Rice video and didn't do the right thing until people found out about it. And you're like going, man, you don't understand
maybe,
how to
but maybe that was but maybe you. That was the plan the whole time.
Yeah, that's a distinct possibility as well. LeBron James has a plan to get people to go vote. We'll explain next on the morning show on 710 ESPN. I don't want to jinx it, fellas. To Raj, what's our timeline looking like? How much time is left in the poll? And am I still leading? I have not looked at it. Do we have an update? Maybe he's not back yet.
I don't know.
Yes, we do. And you are still holding on despite Ben Lyons' endorsement of LZ the Grandy Man. You're still holding on, so it's going to make morning show history the first time since the pandemic and many other things that you might win a morning show snake draft.
Well, hold on. That's kind of right, but not exactly. I think I won like one of the very first one or two, but I haven't won since. I do have a pandemic victory, but I don't think I've had it since like March 20th.
Are you with us or are you not, one. Travis?
No, I'm with you, and I'm about to prove it by winning the snake draft.
Okay.
Coming up here.
The curse may be over. Let's just say
as long as you don't align yourself with the General Lee anymore, you'll be all right in my book.
Yeah, that look, we've all learned a lot over the last couple of weeks and the last couple of months, and perhaps and certainly I'm gonna take the lead of NASCAR and say that the General Lee was a mistake and never should have been on the list to begin with. We talked earlier about Jerry Jones and the fact that he was outspoken about not wanting people to kneel at football games, and he really hasn't said anything. Somebody that's been really consistent about their messaging through all of this stuff, that I'm not just going to be a basketball player. I'm not going to shut up and dribble. I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. I'm going to make movies. I'm going to speak out on what I believe is important, is LeBron James. And he and several others have put together an organization called More Than a Vote. It's an effort to get out the vote in the African-American community, to register to people to vote, to call out election fraud and voter suppression where they see it. And you know, put another check mark underneath LeBron James's name when it comes to being the GOAT. Not necessarily the greatest of all time as a player, but just the greatest of all time when you take everything into consideration. Being a great player, being an activist, and speaking his mind.
He's on it. He's on it for damn sure. I mean, the issues that continue to keep coming up in our country, he continues to be a part of trying to solve those issues. And real issues, too. I mean, and not only by himself, but also getting other players involved, getting other celebrities involved. And that's big, man, because you got to convince them. You have to convince a lot of people that it's okay. You have to convince them because some people don't think it's okay. Some people are afraid. Some people are not as secure mentally at doing things the way others do because they think backlash and they think about what's going to happen in my career. But to be able to get guys to rally around it and understand it and be a part of it speaks volumes of his leadership and who he is.
You know, when you look at the arc in terms of LeBron James's involvement with social justice issues, first of all, you know, having, you know, interviewed him many times, starting from his rookie year, you know that he's a smart guy, and he's a guy who gets it, and he's a guy who cares, and he's always been active in terms of trying to help his community, like the bike riding fundraiser he used to always do at the beginning of the school year to help get supplies into kids' hands back in Akron. He's always been that dude. But what flipped in 2008, what changed beginning the election of President Obama in 2008 was that he became political. It went from being social justice to him being willing to get involved with legislation conversations and interacting directly with politicians that he agreed with and disagreed with on his platform. And obviously, that's only ratcheted up since the election in 2016. His transformation from playing it safe, because let's be real, it's safe to help kids get ready for school. You need some pens? I get you some pens. You need some pencils? Okay, I got you some pencils. What you want? You want some backpack? Okay, I get you a backpack. That's safe. His willingness to be unsafe, his willingness to enter the danger zone where you could get pushback, where you can get people on Fox News telling you to shut up and dribble, where the challenge, where you receive challenges from the President of the United States and people are looking at you to speak on global issues like what's happening in China and Hong Kong, to wade into those waters while, oh, by the way, I'm still in my prime as a basketball player, mm-hmm. right? I didn't pick this up on the back end. No, this is during the height of my career that I'm making this challenge known. You have to see him on the same plane as the greats like Jim Brown and Bill Russell. You just have to, because of his impact on the court and his impact off this court.
Think about in the last couple of weeks. When, and I don't mean to pull this guy into it again, because if he doesn't want a part of this, and he obviously doesn't, then you know, I guess nobody can make him do it. But Tiger Woods' entire existence as the greatest golfer of all time, and certainly as one of the most popular athletes of our generation, has been to not bother people. I'm going to go play golf. I'm going to go win a bunch of tournaments. I'm going to make a bunch of money. But ultimately, I want to make sure that nobody's offended by anything that I say, do, or talk about. LeBron James is not worried about bothering people. LeBron James is not worried about getting in a back and forth with the president or with a political talk show host or with anybody, really. He says what's on his mind, and that's pretty rare. And it's becoming less rare as we move further down this road because people have had enough and people are more comfortable. There's larger money at stake, so maybe you can feel a little bit better about saying what you want because I don't need to worry about losing my job because I've already got enough money, but LeBron was at this before. LeBron did not say, issue some mealy-mouthed equivocal statement about, well, you know, this needs to change and we need to do better. He came out and said, this is, you know what, we're going to do this. We're going to put this program together. This person over here is wrong, and let me tell you why. I am not going to affiliate myself with that because that is wrong. LeBron did not play the middle ever. LeBron has been the guy that has been willing to offend people, to bother people, whereas guys like Tiger Woods and others have always had their business different first.
Different upbringings, man. Different upbringings. And a lot of the upbringing has a lot to do with how you respond to certain things and how you perceive certain things and how you are taught, how you want to interact with your community. Because you have to identify yourself with who you are first and foremost. And a lot of times we look at certain people in sports and entertainment and we automatically assume because of their color of their skin that they're one way. And that's not necessarily true, nor is that the case, because you have to be able to identify and believe in who you are. And LeBron James has always been that. He's never wavered from who he was. You know, we talk about and we talk about guys all the time. We talk about whether it's an O.J. Simpson or anybody. LeBron James, majority of his friendship and the people that he around, they look like him. They look like him. And that's important. That's important to understand and to know why he is who he is. Because when I can turn to myself and I got people that look like me on my left and my right hand side,
that speaks volumes. It just does. And there's a lot of athletes that don't do that. They just don't do it. So they're out of touch with reality.
Is LeBron being an activist and LeBron deciding to put his money where his mouth is and put his name where the issues that he believe in is that because he came up a certain way? Or is that because he's willing to say, you know, I don't care if I lose something over here, because Tiger's positioning, all that is connected.
And, I'll tell you how it's connected.
All right.
All that is connected. Because if I got people telling me and showing me and helping me and I can see my community and the people around me look like me, black and brown, and they understand what the struggles are, it's a lot easier for me to take that leap. Then I got people that don't look like me, that don't understand the struggles, are telling me, well, you know, well, we probably want to just, you know, well, Bob's going to call tomorrow. And let's see if we can get the mayor to chime in
first. Yeah, keep it. Okay, fair enough.
But listen, you don't need to look like that. NASCAR took down the Confederate flag, and Tiger said nothing.
NASCAR, guys. The damn stock car circuit in the South said, we are not okay with this.
You're not listening to me, Travis, or I'm not explaining well enough. One of the two. It's one of the two. Either I'm not explaining it good enough, or you're not listening to me. I hear exactly
what you're saying, Key, and you're absolutely correct that Tiger Woods, the way that he grew up, his worldview, his experiences shapes where he is, and he's not, and it's different. He's not willing to do certain things. But what I will say is this: you don't need to be black to get into this fight.
What you need to do
is give a damn. That's what you need. You need to be able to give a damn. He doesn't give a damn.
In order to give a damn, LZ, you got to be able to understand. You can't give a damn if you don't understand. Let me ask you this.
He understands. He's making a choice. That's my point. He's making a choice.
That's my point, is that I don't think that the people that are running NASCAR understand the way that you understand, the way that LeBron James understands, the way that a whole bunch of people understand. I get your point about Tiger not understanding, but at some point there becomes something that's just so outrageous, you say, this is a bunch of crap. I have to say something about this.
But here's where I'm going to stop you at with NASCAR. It took a police officer to kill a man with his knee for NASCAR to stop.
Hey, Key, I hear you. And that same police officer killed that same man, and Tiger put out nothing.
Because Tiger ain't going to put out nothing.
Because he doesn't give a damn.
He doesn't give a damn, probably. But he also is not in his wheelhouse. Though he's trying to distance himself as far. Tiger got a lot of the OJ syndrome. I just call it what it is. Mm-hmm. You got a lot of that. You lost, brother.
Uh-oh. No, it's real. All right, let's do this.
Let's continue this conversation. Clinton Yates from The Undefeated, he's going to join us next. He'll weigh in on NASCAR. We'll talk to him about Tiger and LeBron as well. That's coming up next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN.
It's your home speaking, and I need you to do me a couple of favors. First, could you get that blueberry that rolled under the fridge last week? It's throwing my feng shui off. Second thing, bundle your home and car insurance with Geico. It's easy, and we could save money. Lastly, I know you were thinking of painting the nursery back to off-white, but I'm actually feeling this baby blue. Didn't think it was my color, but I am pulling it off.
Geico. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
So we'll talk with Clinton Yates coming up in just a little bit. Big Key, I want you to finish the thought of what you were saying a second ago about the OJ effect with Tiger Woods. What do you mean by that exactly?
Well, you identifying the majority of your friends is white. You ain't got nobody telling you that you need to be doing these sort of things. You got everybody just standing there. Because if you had people that look like you in your circle, then people that look like you in your circle are going to be certainly telling you to get your ass out there in them streets and help the cause. They certainly going to be doing that, opposed to protecting their own interest for self gain. And a lot of times when you surround yourself with people that are not from your community, don't know what to how to react to certain things, they say nothing. They just sit tight. And this ain't about George Floyd and the protest. This is about years before that. See, LeBron James had been doing this way beforehand. Maverick Carter and those guys, they've been doing this way before a George Floyd murder. And so if he aligned himself with a whole bunch of white people, I promise you, no matter how strong you think LeBron is right now, he wouldn't be strong then, because they wouldn't be inserting that type of influence in his life as a young black man. But he also knew better when he started to become famous and started the whole LeBron James movement, that he was going to align himself with people that look like, talk like, act like, walk like, and think like him.
All right.
He was empowering his people.
Let's continue the conversation. Let's bring in Clinton Yates right now from the undefeated friend of the show, Clinton Yates, on the Sprint People's Hotline. Clinton, good morning. How are you?
I'm well. How are you all today?
We're doing great, Clinton.
Oh, so formal. Oh, yes. Very formal.
Very, very professional voice there, I must say.
Clinton, just to catch you up on what we've been talking about. We've been talking about LeBron and him deciding that he wants to donate money, time, and eyeballs to making sure that people are registered to vote, to pointing out voter suppression. We kind of had the conversation spin to a bunch of different things and talking about people who have stood up and people who have not stood up. NASCAR stood up, and it took Bubba Wallace to kind of nudge him in that direction. It took what we've seen over the last couple of weeks. Are they just doing this for good PR, or is this a big moment in the history of that sport?
Big moment in the history of the sport, not just for me, but I think for people who also aren't fans of NASCAR, who might have stayed away from the league for a lot of different reasons. And I also think that there's something to be said about the general sort of civil rights nature of what it means for one of the last mainstream bastions that even allowed for any sort of displays like this to basically say no. That, to me, is a big moment in just America in general. I mean, let's not undersell what the imagery and what that flag means. You know, for most of us, it basically means black people are not allowed. That is the most basic sense of what you get when you see that flag. And to take it down, not only to take it down, or not take it down, but to say that we're eliminating it from all events and all tracks, you know, what you're getting at is, like, we are not trying to find a way to give you a reason to show this at all. They did this differently once before, where they say, oh, if you bring them, we can turn them in and give you something else to display in the stands. Now it's like, nah, we ain't having that. And I think there's just a basic human level where if somebody wants to go to the track, they're probably going to feel a little bit safer if they're a personal cop.
But is that feeling safer feeling that you don't know what you're around? Because if I don't know what it is, then I don't know how safe I'm going to be. But if I at least know what it is, I know how to react to it.
I feel you, Key. But, like, here's the thing. I've been watching NASCAR for 20 years, and I ain't never gone to no daggone track because of what you said. I don't know what's going to happen. You know what I mean? I'm not familiar with, you know, with the layout, even if you go with friends. And I think that what NASCAR is saying, the situation is, I mean, you know what I'm saying. I think NASCAR is saying right now, we're putting people in a position where this is a punishable offense. This isn't just something that we're going to look away on or something we're going to try to distract people from. This is something that we actively don't want. Let's not forget what happened 2 months ago. Kyle Larson dropped an N-bomb on a broadcast of an iRacing series, man, and he got thrown out of the league. You know, we ain't that far away from that. So if we're not that far away from a kid in Larson who grew up in the D4D diversity for driving program that NASCAR made itself. He's a graduate of that program. His parents were his grandparents are Japanese, been in internment camps. If the kids from the very diversity program are getting thrown out of racing for dropping N-bombs, then 2 months later, you're actually making steps to get rid of the Confederate flag in your public places. That's a light speed progressive advancement. So I got to believe that this actually means something, even if it is just a business decision, Trap.
I mean, it certainly means something. The real question, and this is a question not just for NASCAR, but for virtually every franchise and every league that have issued these strongly worded statements about being anti-racist, it's all about the follow-through. And the thing that makes it dangerous or interesting when it comes to NASCAR is that we know what some of that looks like, right? We know, we've seen, we've witnessed on news channels, Confederate flag waving, white man with guns storming the Capitol because they wanted a haircut during the quarantine. So I can only imagine what may occur at the gates when you have an RV with old Dixie flapping in the wing and they want to come in.
Yeah, I mean, I know that they're right. Policing versus policy is difficult in terms of what you're going to do. But you got to understand also, there's not as many fans coming to these races anymore. Next week, they're allowing in 1,000 invitees. I believe it's veterans and other special guests. And then the week after that, there's going to be 5,000 people at Talladega. That's not that many people. That's a little easier to regulate. And if it doesn't happen, whereas we open up these tracks immediately, you know, once the rest of the year happens, I think NASCAR is going to be able to get a hold on this. Now, let's not get it twisted, man. This is a good thing, LZ. You know, as much as I might be worried about violate the policy, I'm happy. And if you want to tell me about follow through, and I'm not arguing with you here, I'm just saying follow through. This is as big a follow through as I've seen anywhere in any walk of life in a long time. They're ripping down the daggone Confederate flag. The NASCAR races, guys. That's crazy.
Clinton, this isn't follow through. This isn't follow through, Clinton. The follow through hasn't come yet because it hasn't met the fire. The follow through comes with a fire, brother. It doesn't just come with just.
I'm not buying right? that, and man.
And I'm going to use this as an example. They desegregated the schools, right? They desegregated the schools. But what happened? The fire came. The follow-through was the president calling the National Guard to escort those kids through those crowds. The follow-through wasn't simply saying schools are now desegregated. So when I'm talking about follow-through, I'm talking about once NASCAR is opened up and all the fans are allowed to come in, and you have workers at the gate who are trying to decide whether or not to let these RVs and these cars and these vehicles in with the Confederate flag, and these yahoos are looking at them. That's the follow-through part. We ain't got there yet, bro.
I'll tell you a quick story that Ryan McGee told me. He said that when he used to be at NASCAR, NASCAR would literally fly helicopters around the daggone stadium with binoculars, seeing if they could find people who were selling unlicensed gear. When NASCAR wants to crack down and keep people out of things, they can't. I have no reason to believe that they won't, considering they already made this step to actually remove one of the most racist images that they have from their ranks. I'm believing that they're going to do more than just stand up there and say, y'all can't come in.
Okay, let's do this. There's more to this conversation. Plus, I want to talk a little baseball with Clinton, see if he has any idea on when they may get back to this and what the solution might be. Clinton, sit tight. We're going to come back more with Clinton Yates coming up on the morning show on 710 ESPN. All right, we're continuing our conversation with Clinton Yates from The Undefeated. And, guys, we were talking about NASCAR and their decision to ban Confederate flags from the racetrack. And we'll see what the execution of that ban is, whether or not they're aggressive in their enforcement of that, or whether or not they say, hey, look, we don't want them, but we can't get everyone. And we know what that might look like. At least they said something. At least at this point, they're on the right path. Clinton, what do you make of Jerry Jones's silence through all of this? This is the most powerful owner in the league, the guy that's really the shot caller in the league. We haven't heard anything from him.
I don't mind that, and let me tell you why. Over the past 3 weeks, when we've seen cities boiling over in America, a lot of different brands, public figures, teams, leagues, bars, whatever, have jumped out and hit me with what I've just basically dubbed as statement Twitter now. And it's been, each successive comment has been parsed and analyzed in ways that are effective and necessary for the scholarship of this discussion. But for me, just as a citizen walking around in America, have been completely useless. There's been a lot of statements that have done more harm than good that they ever could have, because I know that a black background with white letters on it on Instagram does not make me feel safer if I see a police officer on the street. So for Jerry Jones, I think there's a healthy amount of strategy here that just basically says, I ain't got nothing to say, number one, because I already played myself in that situation where I took a knee in that crazy blazer with all my players in Arizona. And number two, ain't nothing I can say that's really going to make people feel better right now anyway. And the examples are right there. So it's not about me necessarily holding Jerry Jones to fire. It's about the fact that, let me tell you something, I am inundated with statement Twitter. I am tired of reading this nonsense. How about you give some money to the people who need it, who are on the front line? Sticking something up on social media does not make me feel better as a black person in America, not in June, mid-June 2020. It might have in early May. It might have in February. But right now, that ship has sailed, dog. So I don't get that upset about people who just assume to just decide to stay silent, presuming they're doing something. I don't know what he's doing, but I'm not going to be upset for somebody for trying to not stick their foot in their mouth.
There is something to be said, though, Clinton, and I'm just curious about your take on this, that I hear what you're saying. There's nothing Jerry Jones can say to me to make me feel safer. But is there something Jerry Jones can say to his people, fellow business owners, the business community, perhaps, you know, white males who feel they align themselves with his philosophical approach to life? Is there something he could say to them that would help them understand better where we are right now as a nation? So it's not necessarily about making me feel safer, but about being a better informant to people who may still be trying to figure out what the hell is going on.
Right. The white folks talk to your white friends element here. That's certainly possible. However, it's also possible that Jerry Jones don't believe that. You know what I'm saying? And if Jerry Jones doesn't believe that, he ain't going to come out and lie. He is a very old white man in Texas who is rich. You know what I'm saying? And that is his right, his birthright, obviously. It is entirely possible that this dude simply does not care or is not concerned enough for it to rise to that level. He's got a quarterback to sign. He's got a backup who's trying to say he's a starter. He's got a Super Bowl he's trying to win, and he's trying to figure out how he's going to get a football team on the field. I'm not saying that's an excuse. I'm just saying that if you're a guy like that who's lived that life, that's your priority. He ain't talking to no other rich white business owners about what he's going to do in Texas and in Dallas, because he's probably not even worried about that. That's why he's out here having training camp in California. You know, I mean, I don't know. I guess what I'm saying is, like, for certain people, yes, it would be great. And it would be lovely to hear them speak to their people or wherever they are. But at the same time, there's a lot of folks I'm like, dog, please just put the microphone down. I do not want you to make this worse. You know what I'm saying? Just go ahead and give people their money and let them live their lives.
Yeah, and I think as I continue to tell LZ and Travis, I think Jerry Jones is going to hide behind the NFL statement like most of the owners are doing. The statement was released. We are the league. We are the owners that make up the league. We said what we need to say collectively as a group. We don't need to continue to do things individually, much like Clinton Yates says about letters on a white letters on a black background. We're not looking for that. But what some of us are looking for, some of the leaders like a LeBron James, big, high value professionals, industry people, celebrities. LeBron obviously is doing his part, but there's been a lot of conversation, obviously, about Michael Jordan not doing his part in the early parts of his career. He stepped up to the plate. Where's Tiger Woods in all of this? Tiger Woods kind of just, he's kind of like, I'm going to continue to play golf.
Yeah. Tiger's an interesting character because Tiger has very famously sort of described his racial melange as something that is not just black. I mean, we joke about the Kablazian bit, but, you know, this is one of those moments where, can we get some of that blackness? Can we get a little piece of that black pie? Because you wonder what Tiger could say to, not unlike what LZ said, what could Tiger say to the golf community? You know, I don't golf. And this is not as far down the line to say NASCAR, but there's a reason why I don't golf. I don't feel all that comfortable at golf courses, to be quite frank. I ain't got all that much money. I don't really have that many nice things.
You don't have to have a lot of money.
No, but you know what I'm saying, Key. In terms of the culture of the game, golf is something that feels a little bit inaccessible to me. And I'm not being flip about that. I'm just wondering if Tiger Woods, the same way he brought so many black folks to the game, you know what I'm saying, through his play, that's something he could speak on in his, you know, on his platform in terms of the golf world. I don't know, because I'm not in the golf world. I watch golf on TV.
But you know, us as a people, we support ours tremendously when we see the success that one could potentially have on our community. Those that we support sometimes often forget that they are black, regardless to what you black, man. When it goes down, guess what? You black, okay? At the end of the day, when they pull you over and put them handcuffs behind you, they don't want to hear nothing about no Kablazian and Bayesian and all. They're going to check box black. And so he just doesn't seem to, you know, I was trying to tell the guys, it's an upbringing, it's a surrounding, like his core group of friends. And his core group of friends don't look like him. They not gonna communicate the same if his core group of friends look like him. And that's just my belief. That's my belief in knowing from my own experiences.
I'll tell you this, I'll bet you if Tiger Woods hadn't been, if we were in pre controversy Tiger Woods era.
Now somebody else
would have heard more from him.
Clinton, very quickly, and I'm changing the subject here a little bit. Give me 30 seconds on why you think we will or will not see Major League Baseball this season.
I think we will see Major League Baseball this year. I really hope that the players who come back to play are the best players in the league. I had lunch with a big leaguer yesterday. He said 30 to 40% of the guys he plays with use one word for their attitude about the season: indifferent. That is not good. Between the risk, between the competitive balance, and between the general hassle that it's going to be to play, I don't think the best stars in the game are going to come back. So even if they shove a season down their throats, it's not going to be the competition you think, even though it will be fun.
Clinton Yates, the undefeated friend of the show, joining us here on the morning show. Clinton, thanks a bunch.
I might go out to the golf course. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, let's go. I'll take you. We can come with me. We'll go get it done. All right. Thanks, Clinton. All right. Colin Kaepernick is not back in the league, but according to Pete Carroll, somebody's is kicking tires. We'll tell you what's going on with that next on the morning show on 710 ESPN.